Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor. FM to get started.
V'ger, Kolinar, the ship. Yes, we are finally going to dive into Star Trek the Motion Picture. The good, the bad, the ugly, and the... Oh, that part wasn't so bad. Star Trek Weekly starts now.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
You would think this is the theme from Star Trek The Next Generation, and yes, you're right. But it is also the best part of Star Trek The Motion Picture. This amazing score that they had for the movie. They could not let it go to waste. They apparently could let V'ger go to waste. And Captain Decker and Neely. We never saw them again, but we hope that they're very happy. Welcome to Star Trek Weekly. I'm Christian Blatt, joined as always by...
Carrie Lane here.
Frick
Moran. And this was not the first time I had seen this movie. This is not the first time where I sat down to do a rewatch of it. I was telling Frank. I was telling Phil. Frank before. I know, it's like, and I could have covered for that. I was telling Frank. But I was going to own up to the fact that I mistook you for our Feroz Lito Phil's Fitek.
Total transparency here. Star Trek Weekly show.
There was just sort of this feeling. I'm like, not this time. The last time I watched it, I'm like, I got to give it a fair shake. Because I saw it when I was young, and there's things about it that, you know, that still bother me that we'll talk about that I definitely saw when I was too young. The transporter accident in particular, like that really bothered me as a kid. And I saw it again last night and I'm like, oh yeah, no, not that. No. I don't like that. And you know, I try to be very positive with things and I tend to be able to find the good things about everything. And what I will say, the previous time that I watched Star Trek, the Motion Picture, it was the extended edition, not the director's cut. So it's basically your standard edition with 12 extra minutes in it. And that actually really helped, believe it or not, because what you're thinking is, well, the movie was already 2 hours and 12 minutes. So you're going to add another 13 minutes or another 12 minutes to it. So we're going to get closer to 2.5. But there was a lot of like character development and little things in there that I feel like actually helped the movie. It's incredibly flawed by my estimation. But there's definitely some moments I was able to take away. Carrie, you, I assume, had never seen Star Trek The Motion Picture.
I watched it just a couple months ago, I think,
okay,
before this.
Because I know you also watched 2 and 3. And did you see the one with the whales?
4 is comedy, right?
That's one. Yes, that's the one with the whales.
I only saw 1 through 3. All right. Wait. Yeah, just 1 through. Definitely 1 and 2, and I think I saw 3.
I remember you watching 2 and 3. So, so you had actually just seen it.
Yeah.
But
I was like, what's with the transporter accident? Because I'm like, I don't remember that part.
There's a point where the signal's not strong enough, and they need them to boost it on the other end, and then they don't. So before they can send it back, they start to materialize.
Forming. Yes, and they're like,
and
funky?
They're all jumbled up, and so they go back to the other end, and the report is, what we got back wasn't alive for long, thank God. And the only problem I really have with the transporter is that it looks different in this than any other time we've ever seen the transporter. You know, it's like the weird like tube effect. And I was like, it's a less good effect than the original series. You know, like 13 years earlier you had a much cooler effect. Like, what is this? You know, and they go back to something closer to the normal one. Actually, I think, they like go to the little orange like dots from Star Trek II onward. But anyway,
that scene though, what I like about that is that we've got Ran, which is great to have her back in. manning the transporter control. But immediately Scotty and Kirk, like, get out of the way.
Yeah.
Let us work on this. And then after it all goes to hell in the handbasket, they go back to her and just, you know, hey, don't blame yourself. There's nothing you could have done. Well, yeah, because you pushed her out of the way, guys. So why? There was, yeah, there's literally nothing she could have done.
And I remember I enjoyed it when I watched it, and only thing that I was like, really, is the, like, 10, 15 minutes they spent at the beginning looking at the ship, of like, look, here's the ship, and I'm like, can we move on with the movie?
Yeah, it's what most anyone who's ever seen the movie remembers. It's what people,
took so long.
I did not see this in the theater.
I mean, it probably was amazing when it first came out. Maybe.
No, my mom loves Star Trek, and that's the reason why I like Star Trek. And even she was just like, it's like, and they just keep looking at it. So
it's a love affair between Kirk and the ship.
That's true.
In the film, at least in this cut, the standard cut of it, at 16 minutes and 19 seconds, they start looking at it. They are done looking at it at 20 minutes and 45 seconds. So it is 4.5 minutes. Now, you don't see it full on until 1813. Even that is still 2.5 minutes. And there's cutaways of Scotty and Kirk just like, I can't believe they're showing this much of it. You know? And they definitely in the great Spaceballs, they definitely make fun of this, where you just keep looking at the ship and looking at the ship, and they keep showing it and showing it and showing it. And it looks cool. But it's probably by today's standards, you're just like, oh, it's the Enterprise. It's like,
I've
seen it look better, you know?
But the nacelles are different, guys.
Yeah.
You can do it for like the 2 to 5 minutes. Give me five, that's it.
The interesting thing about the Enterprise itself, which is a great place to start as we really talk about the movie, is that in this movie, it looks completely different than it did on the series, which is fine because it's explained away that they spent like 18 months retrofitting it. It doesn't look remotely like this in Star Trek 2.
No.
Like, and beyond. And not Star Trek Beyond. But in subsequent films. After 3, it's gone. But it doesn't even look a little bit like it. You know, there's huge like decks and things, and some of it actually looks really cool, but it's like the quarters, nothing looks the same in Star Trek 2. So that was the most striking thing for me watching it. What did you think? Let's start with the Enterprise for you, Frank.
It is just, I feel like it kind of resembles, I'm thinking more of like the J.J. Abrams first one, where you get to see just a larger representation of the ship than you've seen in the original series.
Yeah.
I still feel like in terms of going back to what I think fits more in with Star Trek, that I think like this does a better job of capturing that feel of what I imagine the engine room looks like, as opposed to J.J. Abrams' version, which is like using like some kind of water plant or a power plant to kind of represent the whole engineering section, which seems so crazy to me. It makes it seem so much bigger in the ship than I think it has ever looked in any of the TV series or films.
It's so hard to really focus on.
But like, like the look of the cap, the quarters. It's still like so 70s, but like a futuristic 70s.
That's the thing is.
I'm watching this all over the place. Actually, the difference between the movies, the shows, and everything. I'm like, there's differences on the ship. Like,
yeah,
jarring right. to me. Well, but I've been jumping around all over, so I'm like, maybe that's why. It's not like, wait a minute.
Like Star Trek's 2 through 4 are probably what I've seen repeatedly the most, just because they would be on cable. I've seen them more than, you know, in terms of repeated viewings, more than any episode of the original series, more than anything. So that's kind of what, in my mind, that's what the Enterprise looks like, is basically the way it looks in Wrath of Khan, because that's when we see it the most. But it's, so to your point about the 70s, though, this movie looks so 70s. It tries to be futuristic 70s, whereas the subsequent films don't look particularly 80s. They even go to the 1980s in Star Trek 4, and it doesn't look like the 80s in the movie. But from Uhura's hair to...
That was... Okay, actually, that was a big change. I was not happy with.
Yeah, which you never see it like that again. And also, what I always... I knew it was coming too, because I always remember it. Disco Bones with... Where Bones has the V-neck with the medallion, and he's got the big beard. He they definitely grabbed him out of the line for Studio 54, I think. And yeah, it's just, it's weird that it happens to look so 70s because, you know, look, this movie's a direct response to Star Wars, and that movie doesn't look 70s, other than like hair, you know, sort of what the state of hair products were at that point. And I'm not talking about Carrie Fisher's Cookie Monster or Cookie hair. But, you know, and it's just, you just everybody are just, it just, they look like they're making a movie in the 70s, you know, and I don't quite know what they could have done differently.
Well, it's like that, like Epcot, when they first opened up the doors and all their, like, their futuristic versions of what the society would be like in Horizons or whatnot had that kind of 70s-esque look but projected into the future. And then it, as you got back into the 80s or 90s before they renovated it, it looks so dated.
Yeah.
It had that same look to me. It reminded me of that.
Right. And for those watching on YouTube, thanks so much, Steve in the booth has indeed shown us Disco Bones. And but
that just sounds funny.
Disco Bones, yeah. And yeah, that's actually what I was going to say, Frank, is that this is not a particularly like beloved movie. There are definitely composite shots and some work with matte paintings that they're very frayed around the edges. You can see, you know, where they're doing the green / blue screen, whatever they used, and it shows. Whereas if you watched the original Star Wars trilogy in like the late 80s, you started to see that. And Paramount has not gone and done like a big remastering of this, which is what you need to do to have it not look like that. And then some of it looks amazing. And then there's some shots, like when they're on the little pod, when they're actually heading to the Enterprise.
Yeah, the way it flattens out.
Yeah, it's like, it's almost like that sequence is in standard def, and then everything around it is in high def. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I'm sure it looked fine on the big screen in 1979. But yeah, and it's, I don't want it to take me out of it, but it does, you know? And that is no fault of the filmmakers, you know, that's just more, the film hasn't held up. I actually think that at first I started thinking, like, oh my God, did they do a bad transfer to the set? Because this, I have the Blu-ray set for 1 through 6. And it's like one box with all of them. I don't have all the individual ones, which by not having that, there's some bells and whistles that I'm missing. But I was afraid for a second because I was like, wait, do these really look bad? But it's just there's those key effects that don't look good. so excuse me. But that was disappointing that there's things that could have actually looked really cool. Carrie, is this something that struck you when you saw it, or was it, you know, just a little bit more passive and, you know, the expectations weren't necessarily all that high?
Yeah, I don't think my expectations were too high on it. Yeah, there's definitely some effects that aren't amazing, but I think I know it was old, so it's like, all right, well, just haven't. It's funny you mentioned the Uhura's hair, because I'm like, number two picks up right where one leaves off, right?
It's not clear how much time there is in between.
Seems soon
there's
enough
time for them to get decent uniforms.
Yeah, I just
uniforms that are in fact uniform.
Yeah, and no, that's fine. I just remember like they changed her hair. It's between and then or maybe it's 2 to 3.
Two to three are right.
Okay, maybe
right
that's what it is. Two
it's
to
like
three.
I
was like, whoa, yeah. No, because it also just changed her look and it felt so like. There's a no, it didn't work. I was gonna be like, there's a salon in outer space, but I'm like, they could have one on the ship, but it looked out of place for her.
Right, but what we see in
this is
in YouTube
this
right
is
now,
the more 60s.
Yeah, well, it's a very 70s. This is a very 70s sort of afro, you know, look that.
Well, she had like
a widow's
straight
peak
to.
Too.
Yeah, it's just as different. Her hair doesn't look
no,
like
has
this.
She has more the Jerry curl later that you're like, whoa, that is not her hairstyle, and that was what looked strange because it was. This looks like going from the straightened kind of 60s beehive to the more like shaped fro. That felt fine, but when it went to like this, I don't know, just something about it. I was like, I didn't like it at all. But that was 2 or 3. But yeah, back to the special effects. I think you know it's old that you're like, I give it more of a pass.
Yeah, I think just somehow whatever they did for some of the later films looks better now. You know, so like,
what's the problem of watching a movie on a Blu-ray player now? And you're like,
yeah, that's true. If it was a standard def VHS, In 1999, yeah. It probably would have looked a lot better. It's a good point.
But even I think the opening shots of the film with the Klingon Birds of Prey, it still looks nice.
Mm-hmm. Those actually look pretty cool. Yeah. The interesting thing was that the Klingons, they had, this is the first time that we see them with the modern look, you know, not the original series look. And they hadn't quite perfected it yet. What I think that they did after this is they streamlined it and made it a little bit easier to do the makeup, you know, because this was really detailed. And I can imagine just sitting there and seeing that for the first time. And you're like, well, who are these people? Like, they don't say, like, Klingons, you know, not so...
Was that with Christopher Lloyd, or which one was that?
Lloyd is in 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah, I watched 1, 2, and 3 all together, so they're all blending together.
That's one of my favorite Klingons, the moment where he hears the countdown. Get out of there! It's like right up there with anything in Back to the Future.
I don't know. It was kind of weird, Christopher Lloyd, because it almost is like brown face makeup that you're just like...
That's fair.
It looked awkward because it's too much of a skin tone color, and you know he's a white dude that you're like, like if you pick blue, green, purple, anything that's like not like a regular person, it'd fly a little better.
What I thought was interesting about a lot of the technology scenes in this film is that they have the ability to have just these external, you know, omniscient views of things, which seems so weird to me at some points.
You mean when they would say viewer show? Yeah. And it's like something that they never did again.
Yes.
But look, it's a valid point. Like, don't you ever want to see behind?
Yeah.
You know, like you're always looking forward. What if something's coming on? You know, something's gaining on you. Switch to the, So that, and it's funny though. It's just the way. And there's like computer voices that we never hear in anything other than this. It's like, intruder alert. I'm like, what's a man? It's not Majel Barrett, Roddenberry. You know, it's. One of my favorite things in watching it this time, though, was the first time we see Kirk, and I'm like, oh my God, he's so young, which is funny because he's old. He's like much older, well, not much, but he's like, you know, 15 years older than the original series. But he's so much younger than he is now. And look, I don't know what's on his head in this movie, but,
he has weird hair too, right?
He still pulled it together.
No. Yeah. But it's like, he's so dashing. And he's an older man here. He's like, he's in like his mid-40s or something. I don't even know.
See, he's like more distinguished now. That makes him more handsome.
This is pre-TJ Hooker. That's right. How early this is.
Yeah, he looked good here.
His uniform is probably the one I like the best out of all of those.
Yes.
With the gray and the white, it kind of looks better.
Except for the sequences where he's switched to like the white golf shirt. And it's like, why do you have like a backup like summer uniform? And... The jumpsuit, there's a complete inconsistency with it. By the way, I wore the shirt that I had that was the closest homage to that that Kirk uniform. All I really need is the insignia. And, you know, if you look at all the different uniforms, there's not really a consistency. You know, they seem color-coded, but then they're not really... I don't know. I don't think that they paid enough attention to detail with that story. And maybe that's why I started to feel like everybody's in red. Yeah, but isn't red the color of... Everybody's in red.
Yeah. It just seems weird to me. I would love to know more about the behind-the-scenes production of why they thought this was a great choice to have the uniforms be in this style.
Right, going forward. With the sort of, like, the jumpsuit style with the little, like, front fanny pack that I'm not quite sure what that was. You know, the little bulge that everybody had, like, at the front of their stomach. It didn't seem to serve any purpose. Is there like a, you know, some kind of reception? Yeah, this is a great example. Oh, thank you, Steve.
The beige.
That beige look is
gray. I can do beige. Just looks bad.
Yeah, the gray looks good, and it makes Spock actually look close enough to Spock.
Even Bones is okay.
Yeah, but no, Chekov and Uh-huh. Sulu in particular, and then. Yeah, you know,
I would wish if you're going to put that sort of thing on the front of all their uniforms, it would have been nice to know what purpose it serves.
Yeah. It's a belt.
Is it?
Buckle.
Okay. Maybe.
Well, yeah. I mean, Ilya's wearing a slip, basically. That's one of the things that I want to talk about.
Dude, that outfit, I was like, that's not much there.
It's the future. But
no, but she looked great.
That character is much better fleshed out in the extended version. They kind of deal with the fact that it's like, there's just sort of this throwaway that's like, you know, the vow of celibacy and stuff. But yet Decker has this connection with her. But there's scenes, and just in the standard Blu-ray, if anybody has it or rented it and that's how you watched it, there are the deleted scenes from the extended edition. And they're really short, but there's these scenes with, like, Sulu flirting with her, which you got to, you know, take yourself out of the present day, what we know about George Takei.
Mm-hmm.
But Takei. But it's little things like that. And the character is so much better explained that when she's gone, you're like, oh, I was just starting to like her. But when you watch the standard cut of the movie, you're like, okay, so the person I cared the least about is dead now. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll be all right.
I really don't see when V'ger decides to take her. I really don't see any rhyme or reason why it was.
Oh, it was kind of random.
Yeah. Other than, yeah, she's somebody that we've kind of been introduced to that I guess we're supposed to kind of care about, but we can lose easily.
That's the thing about Deltons being so sexually attractive that even V'ger couldn't resist. Yeah,
true.
And it's funny because they didn't really.
Are they normally a very attractive species? Well, that's what I was about to mention,
is that we don't really deal with them a lot. I think in Enterprise they show up, but that's 30 years after this movie, or not quite, but like 25 years after the movie, they don't really deal with I think that they took a step back from a lot of things in this movie, you know, and including that. And if you look at a photo of Percy's Kambata, which is what her name is, when she has hair, she's unrecognizable. And it's kind of the most defining visual, apart from the 8 minutes, and I'm exaggerating, the 8 minutes you look at the Enterprise, is her, because it's like, yeah, you know, it's, so you got your Kirk, you got your Spock, you got your bald chick. That's the poster. And I loved that poster for Star Trek Beyond that had the same look, but it had the other characters. In any case, and yes, the original, the motion picture, like that poster is great for the motion picture. But then I also liked the way that they did the homage to it for Star Trek Beyond. And it's hard to be focused as you talk about this movie. You know, we're jumping around a lot, but...
One last thing about the costumes is that when they're on the space station and Kirk gets there and he's talking to the new science officer who doesn't last very long, but we see as one of the shuttle ships are pulling in, there's a guy walking by which looks like a brown and white dress because it only comes just right past his butts. And I'm like, what kind of futuristic outfit is this for a dude to be wearing? Just, it was such a weird fashion choice.
There's a lot of that in the course of this. You know, and there's some interesting things. You know, there's some great character development. As Frank referenced, we see just how much Kirk loved his ship. And they spend... four movies basically dealing with the fact that he should never have become an admiral. He doesn't want to be promoted. He just wants to captain a ship. And the fact that he immediately jumps at the opportunity, and, you know, rightly so, it makes sense that he should be on this kind of a mission.
But do you think, honestly, I part of me wants to have seen that 3-minute conversation with Nahura, Admiral Nahura, because I felt like I think Kirk kind of threw Decker under the bus.
Yeah,
it wasn't that, like, Nahura was like, okay, yeah, take it.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. I have the expertise. It was like he's untested. I'm sure that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it took. Yeah, that actually would have helped. You know, that would have been an interesting thing. I wonder if that's in the novel. We always had the novel in the house, and I was like, I'm not reading that. I'm not reading that. Just because, you know, I just always had, like, I don't know, there's just so many better Star Trek stories than this one. That's what it really comes down to. Like, it's not a great story. It's kind of like an interesting idea that Voyager, which had only just gone out, I don't know, a couple years before this movie. So it's kind of interesting that that's what V'ger is. But it's still not a great idea. Yeah, it's not the great threat that you have, like, in... It's funny because in Star Trek IV, it feels like a do-over. The threat that they need the humpbacks to talk to.
Yeah.
It's very similar to this. You know, like what you see, this like just thing moving through space. It was almost like, I think we can probably tell that story a little bit better now. But in terms of the good character development, I thought it was really interesting seeing, first of all, long hair hippie Spock while he's meditating and Kolinar. You know, and I mean, he's half human. He's never going to be able to really rid himself of these things. What do you see, Frank, as high points to the movie? You know, as a Star Trek fan, as someone who knows that this is not a great representation of what Star Trek can be on the small or the big screen. What are some of the things that watching it again that you felt like, okay, well, here's what I liked. Here's what I took away.
Well, one thing about that scene that you're talking about, the Spock and Kolinar, is just that necklace. It's like, well, all right, great.
Yeah.
Like, it's just it was not a great piece of Vulcan jewelry.
No.
You know, I mean, I feel like any fan that if you're going to be watching this, you're going to be most excited about seeing the original cast get back together, and specifically the Trinity. You want to see what happens when the three of them get there. And interesting that, you know, just seeing Spock on this little journey that he's going in terms of, you know, trying to purge himself of emotions, then not quite sure, and then the journey that he goes on in the film. There's just something that when he gets back onto the Enterprise, there's just a jolt in interest. Like, he definitely becomes like a focus point for that film when he gets back on the Enterprise.
Yeah, it becomes his movie at that point. And there's great banter with he and Bones, but he's still sort of in the after effects of this Kolinar thing, where he's even more cold than by the end of the original series we were used to seeing him.
Yeah.
You know?
There are bits and pieces in there, too, where you just like the little flourishes where they're building out this what the future would look like at this point, where things that I missed, seeing like the guys in the spacesuits kind of flying around the space dock taken care of, and always like the dude who does like the flip as they're leaving, and he's like, yay! And I was like, just little bits like that kind of just flesh out the world a little bit. I did like, and I am still a sucker for, I'm like both frustrated and still a sucker for when Spock does his exploration of the next level of V'ger. And we go through the really long, elaborate process of activating the rocket pack.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, why are you belaboring this? We all know how a rocket pack works, but they just draw that scene out.
Yeah.
But it's...
And the computer lets you know, like, once you have used it, that's it.
Yes.
You're all gone. And then, of course, like, Kirk's like, Spock. You know, what he does.
There was something, I'm like, I don't think it's all his movies, but how he says it in
He doesn't say it that way every time. Show. But every once in a while, you hear... Spock. That's every impression.
I'm like, what?
Every impression of Kirk is Spock, and you get it right in that moment.
He doesn't even say the CKs, but just like Spock.
Yeah, Spock. That's true.
It's so annoying. It's laughable that you're like, what are you doing?
I did like how they pronounced it in Vulcan, though, when the woman says Spock.
Yeah, Spock. That's a good point. Yeah, no, I know. That's
like, interesting. Spock.
That's what they really think of him.
And it was the one silent Vulcan that was at the Kolinar ceremony. I kept thinking it was the guy that was also from Battlestar Galactica, who didn't speak at all. He's on the right. I was like,
you mean the original, the 70s Battlestar Galactica?
Yeah, was he like Baltar or whatever on Battlestar Galactica? Was that same actor? It looks so close to him. I was like, I got to Google it if that was the case.
Oh wow, I'd have to look at that again. But I don't think it was him. But no. John Calico, I believe, is his name.
There you go.
Yeah. So if you ever want to do an after show in the original Battlestar Galactica, you let me know. I'll stop at Galactica 1980 though. In any case, Carrie, so you watched a bunch of these movies together.
I did.
That helps, I think.
It does.
Because if you just watched this one, yeah, you're getting it mixed up with your better memories of better movies. And I'm still torn as to, you know, this. I don't know if this movie's worse than Star Trek V, but it's probably a better made movie than Star Trek V. I would probably watch Star Trek V again before this, though, just because it's at least the gang in their heyday and there's the comedy falls flat. But it feels a little bit better than this. But what were your thoughts about this movie as you're watching it? You know, this is the first movie and you're watching it and just going through it and...
I think it was interesting that essentially a romance was such a big part of the storyline, because most of the other bits of Star Trek haven't been as romantic. But like, and then also, the reveal of like you are infesting the ship. I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. I didn't see that coming. And I thought the character, Decker and what do they call
him? Aaliyah.
Aaliyah.
Like, I thought that was actually really interesting of them together and like, showing them like let's play a game and like the standard like let's show what it means to be human.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel it felt false here because it was characters who they cared about each other, and now it's just a little more complicated.
Right. They just happened to be the two characters we didn't care about going into the movie.
I was okay with that though. I felt like I cared about them enough. I don't think I didn't care about them. I think how they end together, or how they end, rather, was interesting of like, sure.
Look, it was a great moment in Wind Machine history, just the way his hair is blowing there.
But, you know, I did like Decker in the movie. It's his scene where Kirk's going to take over command.
Sit in the chair thing?
Yeah, I do like that tension between. Yeah. And very rarely do you see anybody talk back to Kirk. Yeah.
And we'll talk about the wormhole sequence in a second, but the fact that he's like, no, I had to, you know, I'm sorry if I embarrassed you, but we would have died if they had listened to you. Because remember, I do know the ship better than you. And it's very hard for Kirk to admit that. And it's great that at first you're like, why is Bones even in this scene? But it actually adds a lot to it. It's like, well, you know, he's right. Let's talk about that wormhole scene. So were we supposed to have dropped acid before it? I don't know if anybody's read that about that, but it was just sort of trippy, but not really enough.
Was
you know,
it
was
other place.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, as they're traveling and it's like, it's not well explained how they end up in the wormhole. It's because there's an asteroid, because they go to warp too soon in the galaxy. Either way, just the effect that they use is everything slowed down. It's all a little blurry.
Oh, where everything's bouncing around too?
Yeah.
Oh, that looks so cheesy.
It was. Okay, guys, and then when it's over, it just clicks right back and everything looks great. But I was just like, it was so bad for... I should have done the time code for that, how many minutes the wormhole sequence was.
It was very awkward watching all the actors just bounce around. Everybody's kind of doing it at different rhythms, too.
That's a great point. The pacing was not
uniform.
You're like,
we're
not
all the same.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
This is interesting for the fact that they say, like, you know, we warp speed, we shouldn't do that within our galaxy. Something that's
never been a problem before, nope. Ever.
Yep, yeah. And thrown by the wayside after that as well.
Yeah.
Everybody's just racing around through warp speed out of this stuff. I'm like, oh, okay.
I mean, Scotty figures out how to transport during warp, you know?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, other than just hitting that hammer beat again where Kirk doesn't know all the facets of the ship since he's been away for so long,
yeah.
I don't know what other sense that, other than just to waste some time, what the scene doesn't really provide anything else.
No, and it's funny. It's like they cut out 13 minutes and they leave all that in.
Yeah.
They'll leave everything where you're looking at the ship. Yeah, it's it was hard to watch. Like, I'd say there's a lot of it that I think there's a lot of great attempts at things that just didn't quite work. That's just hard to watch, and it's just completely unnecessary. You know, it doesn't advance anything other than Kirk doesn't know the ship, which we can get other ways. That's all right. I do think that they were trying to make a sort of a more sophisticated science fiction story, you know, like a little bit, I don't mean adult in terms of the themes, you know, even factoring in Leah's super short skirt. I don't think it was adult in that way, but it was more adult, you know, like Star Wars was definitely going for the family, for the kids. And this was like, okay, well, we're going to go with Star Trek, which is a little bit more highbrow than that. You're going to think about the science of it. And you see very early in the credits, the science consultant, Isaac Asimov. So, you know, they obviously wanted to really work on the sci-fi concepts and develop them. And so it's interesting, a lot of what they're trying to do. And it's, you know, things like, well, what happens if the transporter doesn't work? It's not something we'd ever seen before. In that way,
yeah.
You know, in that horrifying way that scarred me as like a 4-year-old. But anyway.
Or what if warp speed doesn't activate properly?
So those are interesting questions, but also like, it didn't really help the story, you know? But
I'll tell you, though, two things that I liked. One, I did like the, in the sense of making this place bigger, like just seeing like the one scene where in the recreation center where Kirk shows them the footage by the Klingon ship. And then we get to see that
keep going.
Oh, no.
The thing about that.
Oh, the whole crew, which I like, that was nice. We've never really, to that scale of seeing everybody on the Enterprise. I thought that was nice.
That's something that you haven't had before or since. And I did, that was actually one of the things I did like was, the recreation center. Yeah. What were you going to say?
On the DVD special, I think the box set that you have, because that's one I got in my library, they have a conversation with some people who were extras in that scene. and like how people got involved with the movie. And so this was, they couldn't afford that many people. So it was essentially like fans of like, here, come be extras in the movie.
Yeah.
I do like the one guy that still has all the acne on his face.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, man, you couldn't just throw some makeup on.
And there's like a couple of aliens, and some of them are like races we never saw before or after. Yeah. You know, there's an Andoran there. You know, maybe his tentacles are a little floppy, but and you look at it, and yeah, it was almost like the reason why the uniforms don't mesh is because it was like bring your own uniforms. Yeah. You know, it's like if you got a Star Trek uniform, go ahead and put it on.
But I do recommend if you guys get the DVD set, I think it's with the set or something. There's a really good behind the scenes special that it's just like a conversation. It's interesting because it's like maybe four people. One of them is super young because he was like, oh, he's I think he's Scotty or Bones' kid in real life, and that's how he got to be there. And so he's like, was, you know, 17, 18 at the time, but the other people, and so now he's like 40, and the other people are more like in their 60s because they were, you know, older then. But it's so fun to hear their experiences, like how they're all excited. And, so it was really cute. But yeah, that scene definitely, it was so nice to see how many people, because then you get a scope because you just think it's the people on the bridge. And then you're like, oh no, there's like a lot of people making everything run.
Yeah. The character I was consistently drawn to, and I don't know if you guys felt the same way, was the for some reason, every time I saw him, I kept on thinking it was like Bronson Pinchot.
But Balky from Perfect Strangers.
Yeah, but yeah. With like the high brow, the high forehead, and the hair. Every time he was in a scene in the background, I was always consistently drawn to him. And I wanted him to do something.
You wanted him to do the Dance of Joy.
Do anything. But it's like, I've never seen that race before.
Oh, yeah, is it that? No.
Well, I don't know. We're getting great crowd shots.
Yes, on the left. Yep. It's like, I've never seen him before. I've never seen him again. But darn it, I wanted to see more of him now because of this. some Star Trek writer, please give me some backstory on this gentleman.
I think you need to be the one to write the story. That's going to go in an anthology collection of lesser known characters. You know, you know what? I'll do the... I'll do the romance between Decker and Alia when they were younger. You know, I'll tell that story. Mm. And of course, Decker's the dad from Seventh Heaven, who I guess his public image has fallen on very hard times. True. I'm not talking about that aspect of it. It's just more that it's so funny because it's like, you know, he's so young here. Like that's stark, like how different he looks. You know, Shatner looks like Shatner. One of the things that I want to get to before we talk about it, there's a comment from Mark Zukov, and this was on last week's show, but he was stressing that we talk about the director's cut of the movie. Now, there are several different cuts of the movie. This isn't Blade Runner, where there's like nine, but there's a director's cut, and then there's the extended edition, which is a theatrical edition with the 13 minutes I'm talking about put in there. The director's cut actually trimmed some of the effects sequences that went a little long. And they use the red alert sound from the original series. There's little touches like that that I think are less distracting. Mm. But his point is that he thinks this is the most true to Gene Roddenberry vision that Star Trek ever had, which it's a debate topic whether or not that's fully a good thing. And I think he's right. I think that because he's saying that the other thing is Encounter at Farpoint, which is one of my least favorite episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, which is why we're going to take a look at that next time for our next show. But that's also because it's a Q episode, and I want to tackle some Q episodes. I want to convince myself that I like Q more than I do. But anyway, and it's that's sort of what I'm talking about. You know, when I'm saying that it's going for sort of a higher level, you know, approach to this kind of storytelling. And maybe that's why it doesn't work, you know, when it's a purely Gene Roddenberry story. The vision that he had is great. I just think his team of writers were so much better at executing it than he was, you know. I mean, there's a reason why you don't see, you know, just a written by Gene Roddenberry on the series, you know. It's because he had people who did that for him.
And I feel like there's no shame in that. I mean, you can have a great concept, but sometimes you can't execute your own vision properly.
And you can take the written scripts and be like, you know, let's make this consistent with the universe of the series that we're in. That's fine. But yeah, I mean, if you see that documentary about the first season of Next Generation, Chaos on the Bridge, this is an older Gene Roddenberry, of course. But you can see how the show getting off the ground was made much more difficult by his, and not that he shouldn't have been involved, but just the level to which he wanted to be involved. And I think that, you know, the series is certainly better thereafter. But it's an interesting thing you're talking about, the uniform of the guy, because the uniforms in Next Generation season one, they're trying to have this sort of like asexual look where it's like, you know, non-gender conforming or whatever. Anyway, the movie ends and, you know, there's like the human adventure is just beginning. And I was like, well, it hadn't started yet, really, for me. It's like the movies really, like when you think about them, when you're talking to somebody who wants to know more about Star Trek, that wants to watch, you know, I would never tell somebody to watch Star Trek the Motion Picture. You know, I would say, you know, Star Trek II, if you're watching movies. I have like a go-to of like 10 episodes of the original series, depending. And it's like, all right, watch those. If you don't like it, you're probably not going to like anything. You know, if you don't like Star Trek II, you're not going to like Star Trek. I just fully believe that. Star Trek IV, I feel pretty strongly about, but that might be too silly for some people. So, it's fun to see the whole gang together. And I can imagine for people who were so starved for this cast to get back together, it must have been great to see Sulu and Chekhov and Uhura and, of course, Bones and Kirk and Spock. And it just, that must have been great. You know, so I'm trying to put myself in the frame of mind of people seeing it in the theater after, you know, the show had been off the air for 10 years.
But there's also the thing, like, with Star Trek, I mean, they had some great allegories on there in terms of the original series, but they also had, like, really, you know, just, like, fun to watch fight sequences where you get to see Kirk's dropkick and things like that. They're also part of the series, too. So interesting to see where things that the fans kind of really loved and kind of got them sucked into the series, that it just went for such a loftier approach for the first time you're going to see them back after such an extended period away.
It would have been amazing if something like Wrath of Khan was what they did for the first movie. You pick someone from the series that, you know, at this point it had been rerun hundreds of times, so people know the characters, and you're just like, hey, here we are, you know. I mean, that's the kind of approach you take to something now, any kind of reboot or, you know, reactivation of something.
It would be interesting to see if that had been the case, what the franchise would be like now, because I feel like there was such a stark counter-reaction after the motion picture came that got us Wrath of Khan, which is great, but if that had been the first thing we'd get seen out of the gate, how would that have changed the franchise going forward?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and it's not even, I don't know, I think that it's just more in hindsight, the way that the movie is viewed. It was successful. They obviously have made 12 additional films, so you feel like, you know, they figured out, they addressed what they felt like the creative problems were, but people were just happy to see Star Trek on the big screen, and I think the subsequent films just do a much better job of it. And it doesn't feel like the same series, whether you're looking at the series, the animated series, even the original series, the films that follow it. It's weird. It's almost like it's a mirror universe, you know. It's like there's a lot of inconsistencies, you know. So for people who know Doctor Who, there was an American TV movie that they made, and there's a lot of things in that that a lot of people feel like aren't canon, and they wondered if people were going to consider it as actually part of it when they did the reboot, if they were going to ignore it. And they basically pay attention to what they want to. It's very easy to just sort of ignore all of this, you know, because the Enterprise doesn't look like this in the uniforms are different, and just everything's different. It's almost like this was like a false start, you know. This was the cage and not where No Man Has Gone Before, or the man trap, depending on, you know, production order versus air date order. But
At least the cage had cool costumes.
That's true. Oh, yeah, it's true. I love those costumes. You do know that. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to revisit this every 15 years or so. But, you know, I always talk about on the show my hope that, you know, I'll be watching Star Trek all the way through with my son. And I'm like, I'm probably going to have to skip this one, you know, and just be like, oh, we're going to Star Trek 2. But he's going to be like, 2 is not 1, you know. So he's going to know we're skipping something. I'm just like, yeah, but I don't want you to lose interest, you know.
When, if you decided to do that route, when would you say, like, all right, now I'm going to show you the motion picture?
After we've watched, you know, Undiscovered Country, you know, it's like, I just go back. I go back now. We've seen all the films, the original films. In any case, I don't know. I enjoy watching it and sort of, you know, seeing what worked and what didn't. But I hope everybody has their thoughts to share as well. Please let us know in the comments. Next time we are going to talk about Encounter at Farpoint. I'm almost 100% sure it's not going to be next week. I think it has to be 2 weeks from now because I'm going to be in Vegas. I don't think I'm going to make it back.
Ooh, somebody's gambling.
We'll take a break because I'm covering a film festival.
So there you go.
There you go. Boom. That's all right. Yeah. And look, it's fun when Frank and I just talk Star Trek. But you know what? If you're not going to be here, that's a perfect reason. So we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Boom.
In any case, thank you so much. You can so you see us in 2 weeks. We're going to be talking about Encounter at Farpoint, the pilot for Star Trek Next Generation, which has the same theme song. In any case, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. Carrie, where do people find you?
Yeah, you guys can follow me online at Carrie D. Lane. That's KARIDLANE. And tune in because I'll be covering the red carpet and film festival of the, or film festival in general of the Los Angeles. I'm gonna wait. Next, I'm getting ahead. There's another one in May, too. Man, I'm like all excited.
Just here. Follow you on Twitter and figure out what you're following.
It's the Indian Film Festival of Los Angeles. There we go. For nice. PSTV.
All right. And Frank.
Oh, yeah. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Happy Go Jackie. Getting ready for see Riker skipping across some rocks and whistling. Can't wait. Can't wait.
None of us can wait.
I haven't seen it at all. Oh,
it's
going
to
be great.
I'm excited to hear what you think. All right. But so until 2 weeks from tonight, live long and prosper.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.